So I'd just like to start with just answering a question. Actually, Jerry, have I got that right? Yeah, Jerry stopped me beforehand, and he asked me, what's the difference between rapture and bliss? Well, so much gets lost in translation. Where this came up from last week was I put this chart up here, and I listed rapture and bliss as two of the factors of jnana. I wrote down the original Pali words, and rapture translates as priti, and bliss translates as sukha. So what one could do is you could go online and look up the Pali English Dictionary and read about these terms and try and figure out what exactly they're getting at. But rather than doing that, I'll just actually describe it with a little story. And this story is basically just illustrating a spectrum of deepening contentment. So here's a story, and it's appropriate to the time of the Buddha 2,500 years ago, or perhaps even today in modern Egypt, perhaps. So the story goes like this. So imagine you were traveling through the desert for many days, the sun beating down on you, and your water is starting to run out. So you're starting to get a little worried. It's a very dangerous thing to travel through the desert. And then off on the horizon, you see some other travelers coming towards you. And as you approach them, you notice that their clothes are damp. And as they pass by, you speak with them and they tell you, oh, there's an oasis just over the horizon there. You're quickly approaching it. And this gladdens your mind. You get really excited about this. Ah, oh, this is wonderful. And as you continue to travel in that direction, you begin to see the oasis and the horizon. And you see other travelers coming towards you, and their clothes are wet. And again, all of their water bags are full. And this further gladdens your mind. And then you arrive at the oasis. What a beautiful sight. These palm trees and animals and lots of other people and this beautiful, clear pool of water. And then you immerse yourself in this water. Ah, just imagine how wonderful that must feel to just swim in this water, just bathe yourself and drink. And again, this is yet another ripening and a deepening of contentment. And then imagine when you're done, you get out and you wrap yourself in a white cloth and you sit upon the shore of this pool of water. Ah. Again, this is yet another deepening and unfolding of contentment. So the way that this is described in the Pali Canon, in the tradition, is rapture. It's traditionally described as contentment tinged with excitement. Yeah. And bliss is a deeper form of contentment where this excitement has arisen, fully ripened, and faded away. So you're left with this much deeper contentment when you enter into a state of bliss. So you can see in this analogy, approaching this oasis and first getting into the water would be an experience of rapture. Being in the water, then coming out, wrapping oneself in a white sheet, would be more towards the experience of bliss. Make sense? So I'd like to really emphasize this language of a spectrum of experience here. So you can go down this path of trying to parse your experience into these different categories with this idea of what is present and what is not present. Different strokes for different folks. I find it much more helpful to relate to what's being pointed at here as a spectrum of experience. Okay, so now I'd like to just quickly recap what we did last week. So last week we were focused upon the five hindrances and the corresponding factors of jnana as well as the factors of awakening. And the Buddha described the five hindrances as something that we need to really pay attention to, and we need to really apply effort to abandon the hindrances. And I shared this quote last week from the Buddha. These five hindrances are makers of blindness, causing lack of vision, causing lack of knowledge, detrimental to wisdom, tending to vexation, leading away from nibbana. Very strong language here from the Buddha. And then later in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha describes the process by which we can abandon the hindrances. So here it's a five kind of step process. It's all related to each other. And the first two have to do with present moment awareness, of knowing what is present and knowing what is not present. So here, monks, when ill will is present within him, a monk knows, ill will is present within me. And similarly, when ill will is not present within him, a monk knows ill will is not present within him. So this is pointing at present moment awareness. Now the following three here have to do with pratichitsamuppada, which is translated as dependent co-arising, or put colloquially, actions have consequences. So here the third one. He knows how ill will that is not yet arisen comes to arise. He knows how ill will, once it has arisen, can be abandoned. And he also knows how abandoned ill will does not arise in the future. So the idea here is that if we understand the conditions which give rise to ill will, then if we can eliminate those conditions, then ill will not arise. Easier said than done. Last week, then I used this example of getting stuck in traffic. That causes me ill will. That causes me frustration. And the condition of getting stuck in traffic, well, I can simply avoid getting stuck in traffic. Then I shared this thought of what's being pointed at in the Buddhist tradition actually runs much, much deeper than that. And I shared this image of the liberated mind, or the Buddha, being in a state of complete peace and ease and joy, even when stuck in traffic. So the Buddha's happiness is completely independent of external conditions. It's completely reliable. Happiness that is completely reliable at all times and under all conditions. This is what liberation is pointing at. So it doesn't matter if you get stuck in traffic. It really doesn't matter. And again, much easier said than done. So let's explore this in a bit more depth. And also to explore this as really a spectrum of experience. So this spectrum, I've got two ends of this spectrum. So over here on one end is fixed self. And over here on the other end of the spectrum is no self. So this is one of the most, I'll call it one of the most misunderstood and easily misunderstood teachings in Buddhism. This idea that there's no self. So rather than trying to figure out what no self is pointing at, we can actually start to explore a movement towards this idea of no self, and really just a movement towards something that feels much more spacious, much more free. So I've put this intermediate placeholder here, which I've referred to as fluid self in this spectrum. So we've got fixed self, fluid self, no self. So here, over here, I've just written a few characteristics of fixed self. Fixated, contracted, distracted. And when we can enter into something which is much more fluid, our minds become much more flexible. We become much more spacious. Our minds become much more unified. So I referred to this state last week as a state described commonly as flow, of wholehearted attention. It's quite interesting to think about, is there a limit to which this fluidity, is there a limit to it? And according to the Buddhist tradition, the answer is actually no, that this fluidity is so limitless that at some point it even stops making sense to call what we're experiencing a self, whatever that's supposed to mean. So here I just wrote some words here for no self. Beyond dualism, which I'll say more about later. Wisdom beyond words, and it's deeply mysterious. So no self. Now, in terms of this idea of beyond dualism, how can we use this to help us? How can we practically apply this idea of dualism and dissolving dualism gradually? So one very interesting question that will arise in Buddhist circles is this question of whether or not someone is enlightened. So I know people who will be approached with this question, oh, are you enlightened? Or am I enlightened? Or perhaps even taking the stance of, I am enlightened. So I think this is a really interesting question, because the question itself, it tends towards dualism. So there's two states implicit in this question. Either you are enlightened or you're not enlightened. I prefer a question that really brings a spectrum of experience to the fore. And I consider this stepping into a fluid self as just a glimpse of freedom, a taste of freedom, a movement towards freedom. So I prefer this question. And actually, this is how I respond to this question. If anybody asks me if I'm enlightened, I basically will say, I have no idea. And I actually really don't care. And I suggest a different question. Are the qualities of the liberated mind arising naturally in your experience? So this is a really important word, naturally. Right? Are the qualities of the liberated mind arising naturally in your experience? So what naturally is pointing at is it's a spontaneous arising of positive qualities. So there's no effort involved. It's actually just simply a natural state. So I've written some examples down here. What are these qualities? Kindness, empathy, wise discernment, patience, virtue, persistence, generosity, equanimity, and peace. And this list goes on. So I think it's quite helpful to think about practice in terms of developing these skills. Noticing when they're present, the strength of them, that sort of thing. Right, so in terms of beyond dualism, I'm going to say more about this. Right, so if you recall last week, if you were here, I put this chart up, which I've redrawn here, that describes how we create suffering for ourselves and also for others as well. And this is really actually our starting point, this me versus them, or us versus them. Now, we think of ourselves as these separate, isolated selves, and from that arises what I want, which then can quickly progress into I must have, this insistence upon how our experience needs to be for us to be happy. I must have, I must not have. And then that quickly then becomes, now I'm happy or now I'm not happy. And then we know from our experience that this happiness, it doesn't last. It's not reliable. So then we just very quickly come back to, I must have, I must not have. And around we go. Right, so what I've added to this is I've put this side by side with what are called the eight worldly winds. So these are four pairs, and on the left-hand side are things that are desirable, things that I want, things that we want. And on the right-hand side are things that are undesirable, things that we don't want. So we've got pleasure and pain, praise and blame, gain and loss, and status and disgrace. Or perhaps this last one is better stated as good reputation and bad reputation. How do we move beyond this sort of dualism? It seems like to want pleasure is a good thing. So here's the path. It's dissolving dualism gradually. And actually, in the Buddhist tradition, there's two paths that are stated in the Buddhist tradition. There's a path that's instantaneous, and you will get this in the Pali Canon, where the Buddha will come across someone, or someone will go and speak to the Buddha and receive a teaching from the Buddha. And in the Pali Canon, it'll say, liberation arose in this person. They could see clearly the nature of things, and then they became enlightened. So in the Pali Canon, it can happen instantly. For us, I think that's a lot less common. It's a gradual path, and the Buddha points this out. So if it is instantaneous for anyone here, well done. And for the rest of us, it's a gradual path. Now we're going to come back to this question that we left off with last week, which is, how do we abandon ill will? So in the Pali Canon, there are multiple strategies that are listed by the Buddha. And I've just listed three here. How do we abandon ill will? So the first one here is to observe the arising and the fading away. So what this advice is pointing at, it's pointing at viewing our experience through the lens of impermanence. So if you think about ill will, when it arises, it's not like we're angry 24/7. I don't think anybody's angry 24/7. Maybe. I don't know. But at least when I look at my experience, I'm not angry 24/7. I'm not happy 24/7. So I don't know if you've ever noticed this in your experiences. When in a state of anger, just to allow it to arise. And this is one of my my slogans, actually. I work a lot with slogans to remind me of the truth of the nature of things, is when I'm drowning in ill will, I will just simply say to myself, this too will pass. This too will pass. So it's very interesting, because it's a very fine line between suppression and repression, which we know that, you know, whatever we resist persists. When we suppress things, they don't actually go away. They might momentarily. But here we're actually looking at a much deeper truth, which is the truth of impermanence. All things arise and all things fade away. So it's very interesting to actually turn towards any one of these hindrances and experience them through the lens of impermanence. And I guarantee you, that whatever you're experiencing will change. So observing the arising and fading away. Another example that's pointed out, or another strategy that's pointed out, is considering the consequences. Yeah. So I think no one would argue against this idea that when we get angry, it's painful. It's really painful to get angry. And usually also if we're doing that in relationship to another person, our anger can also be quite hurtful to the other person as well. I don't think anybody would argue that. So we can know this intellectually as an idea. I'm quite convinced that most people do. Yet that's oftentimes, or sometimes, not enough to actually change our behavior. So sometimes knowing something as an intellectual idea is not enough, right? So one thing I like to do around this is I'm a big fan of images as well. There's something about images that bypass our cognitive faculties and speak directly to the heart. So images being metaphors or similes, stories, they're placeholders. So I quite like this image for abandoning ill will. And this image, it comes from Buddhaghosa. And he described ill will like picking up hot coals and throwing them at another person. That's the way he describes anger. And actually he describes it as picking up either hot coals or excrement and throwing them at another person. And in that act, you either burn yourself or you dirty yourself. This is the image that Buddhaghosa shares. So sometimes when I'm in this state, immersed in ill will, I will simply bring this image to mind, and it interrupts this mind stream of ill will. Because as the Buddha said, this is an absolutely essential training principle here, that which one brings to mind frequently becomes the tendency of the mind. So the more energy we put into being angry, frustrated, bent out of shape, the more we become angry, frustrated, and bent out of shape, and the more habituated that state of being becomes. So to abandon this state of ill will, or any of the hindrances for that matter, we actually have to interrupt that mind stream. And a good way of interrupting that mind stream is actually by cultivating the opposite. So considering the consequences, there's an image there. How about in terms of cultivating the opposite? It's another image about cultivating the opposite. It's an image of having a peg in a hole and then driving that peg out with another peg. So the first peg could be ill will, and the second peg could be loving kindness. So one thing that I have done over the years, and I actually continue to do, I have been cultivating an imaginative relationship with the Buddha, as described in the Pali Canon. Yeah, it's quite nice. Yeah, the Pali Canon, it can be quite dry, you know, so it helps to bring some imagination to it. I'm going to read you a little story from the Pali Canon, and this particular sutta is called Insult. So this sort of comes back to the praise and blame, or good reputation, bad reputation. So in this story, there's a Brahmin who comes to visit the Buddha, and this Brahmin is really pissed off. So he gives it to the Buddha. And then when he's done, the Buddha then asks him these series of questions. It's a very skillful response. So I'd just like to read this to you. There's two things in this sutta. There's the language of the Blessed One, so that's referring to the Buddha. And there's also this language of Gotama, which was the Buddha's family name. So Gotama also refers to the Buddha as well. Having approached the Blessed One, Brahman Akosa Bhadravada abused and criticized the Blessed One in foul and harsh words. Thus reviled, the Blessed One spoke thus, "Well, Brahman, do friends, confidants, relatives, kinsmen, and guests visit you?" "Yes, Gotama, sometimes friends, confidants, relatives, kinsmen, and guests do visit me." "Well, Brahman, do you not offer them snacks of food or tidbits?" "Yes, Gotama, sometimes I do offer them snacks or food or tidbits." "But if, Brahman, they do not accept it, who gets it?" "If, Gotama, they do not accept it, I get it back." "Even so, Brahman, you are abusing us who do not abuse. You are angry with us who do not get angry. You are quarreling with us who do not quarrel. All this is yours. We do not accept. You alone, Brahman, get it back. All this, Brahman, belongs to you." So I sure wish I could do this on a regular basis. Yeah, I just love this image. So a friend of mine once shared a little slogan with me, which is getting at the same thing. We're talking about this. And what she likes to say to herself is, oh, not my circus, not my monkeys. Not my circus, not my monkeys. You know? It's like, that's not my business. It doesn't really matter what you think, in a way. So there is something here about not taking things personally, which is different from not taking things seriously. They're two very, very different things. So to not take something personally is to not be so fixated on what I want, what I must have, what I must not have. Because when we take things personally, we so easily just slide right into this, it's me versus them, us versus them. And then right away we start to polarize and problems arise. But if we could simply just not accept, and there's so much going on in the world that's, it's so hard to take on board, it really is. But is it possible to feel deeply and to hold lightly? Is that possible? And according to the Buddhist tradition, it is possible. It's very possible.